Welcome back to another week of the Young Turks. I'm John Adirola. Cenk Uygur is out for, I think, a really long time, actually. I think weeks. I don't know exactly. He's doing a tour of the world to repair some of the damage the president did during his recent tour of the world. As of us going live, he's gripping a glowing sphere, actually, somewhere in the Arab world. But while he's gone, we do have Michael Shore, Anna Kasparian. Mm-hmm. Thank you for joining me in the first hour. And of course, we'll be leading the second hour of the Young Turks with, I believe, Brett Ehrlich and Hassan.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And so that should be awesome.
What should we do that hour? Where do you want to go?
I assumed I would be sitting in the control room, wrapped, my attention focused on the show.
Well, let's just listen to it in the car. Let's take a ride.
Yeah, listen to it in the car. We'll do that. Now, this is a big week. It's going to be. I know that Thursday of this week, we of course have the much anticipated James Comey testifying that's going to happen in Congress, and so that's huge. We have a gigantic story being released by The Intercept right before we're going live. So we're going to talk briefly about that a little bit later on in the hour, but of course we will be starting with the major news coming out of London. The UK suffered its third terror attack of 2017 this weekend, tragically. This time, three attackers targeted civilians in the area immediately surrounding the London Bridge. As of today, seven have already died and nearly 50 are wounded. I believe the majority of them in critical condition right now in London area hospitals. We have a little graphic we're going to show you. There's a lot of information that's been released about exactly what happened. Effectively, they used a van as a weapon initially on the London Bridge before getting off on foot and attacking people in a crowded market area, an area rife with bars and restaurants and that sort of thing, a civilian heavy area. However, many emergency calls were put in, I believe over 100 in the first moment or two of the attack. And then within the first 8 minutes of that call, the three attackers were shot dead. More information is coming out about the attackers. We're going to talk a little bit about that, including their country of origin, because there are some narratives at stake here, I suppose. In terms of exactly who they are, I don't care about that. They're assholes who got what they deserved for an absolutely terrible attack. And especially considering that the Manchester attack just happened, that even that wasn't the first attack in the UK. That's very rough. And the people of London are showing, you know, incredible
resilience,
durability in the wake of it, as John Oliver described very well in his program this weekend. But I mean, that's an incredibly rough situation to be in, to know that this sort of thing is now happening with more regularity in that country.
Yeah, I mean, it seems to be the place that they have said that they were going to put down roots a while ago, going back to when the United Kingdom backed George W. Bush. There's a history to why they did it, why 7/7 happened, and why people were outraged that there was support from Tony Blair for George W. Bush. And that hasn't seemed to dissipate. And the way that they've treated that community, many people say, is not right in the United Kingdom. I don't know well enough to say that that's true or not, but it certainly has been a flashpoint, a focal location for these people to do these things. And I don't, you know, the problem with this stuff is you don't know the victories, right? You don't know that it's like anything in intelligence. You know, you don't know what's going really well. You just know when it went really poorly. And this seemed like such a, you know, a haphazard. When we look at all of them, they don't. None of them are terribly professional, but some of them, they all do terrible things, and they have terrible results. But this seemed more haphazard, even.
Right. And look, anytime a situation like this comes up, you know, the question of balancing, you know, civil liberties with national security is a topic that should be discussed. And one thing to keep in mind is that, you know, Britain is very different from the United States. Well, in theory, it's very different than the United States when it comes to certain privacy issues, right? So the government there is very open and honest about the fact that they collect data on everyone. There are cameras everywhere filming every single move that every person makes in the public. And so right now, what I think the most
they also call sweaters jumpers.
They do. Yeah. They do call sweaters jumpers. Some jumpers, completely different thing here in the US. But I think what's important is to kind of, and I know it's difficult, avoid all the different players that are trying to exploit this tragedy for political reasons and start thinking about real solutions, because this is something that keeps happening over and over again.
Yeah.
You know, there was the bomb in Manchester just 2 weeks ago, and obviously what world leaders are doing right now isn't working. And it's not a question of political correctness. Being less politically correct isn't gonna miraculously stop ISIS and all of these terrible people from doing what they're doing. We need real solutions.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, all of this data that officials have and all of this spying that officials do, it's still not solving the problem. So what do we do? What more can we do? Also, just one quick point on that. Authorities have released the identities of two of the assailants. Now, all three of them have been killed. I'm not gonna name the person, but there's one of them who's 27 years old. He was a British citizen who was originally born in Pakistan, but he was on everyone's radar. In fact, he was on an episode of Jihadis Next Door, which is a show that talks
Which episode was that?
Which, you know, talks about extremists and, you know, some of their ideology. And it's just amazing because officials had been investigating him and then they just dropped the investigation.
Yeah, but you still, you can believe that a person believes radical things. You still need, you can't simply just lock up everyone, of course.
Right. Well,
there's always going to be tons of people that theoretically could commit an attack, but
right. Look, I'm not saying that you just lock them up without
evidence. No, I'm not saying
you
are, but I'm saying it's tough. Even if you have reason to be suspicious of them, that's.
But right now, I don't know why they decided to drop the investigation, right? And so instead of collecting all this data on all these innocent people, I feel like the resources should be focused more on individuals that you know are extremists. And of course, don't put them in prison right away without convicting them of anything, but keep your eye on them. You know, right now, British officials have at least 500 different cases open in regard to extremists and possible terror plots.
Well, but yeah, that speaks to the fact that, that you were talking about there, and just to go back to what I was saying earlier, you're talking about how whatever they're doing isn't working. Actually, it might be. Like, they might be 99% effective, and then somebody like this slips through. It's when they slip through and it doesn't work and there's an incident, it's so tragic, it's so awful. But it might also just be that this is the most successful anti-terrorist group. We just don't know. Like, you hear 500 people, that means the 500 first got through.
500 individual cases involve many people.
Right. So that's what I'm saying, 500 individual cases that are not coming to fruition, and one did here, and seven people died actually. And so I don't know, it may just
be another one 2 weeks ago.
What I'm saying is they may be unbelievably effective, and it sounds horrible to say that. Mm-hmm. We just don't know what is going well, and so that makes it even more complex.
Right.
Because that is when the politics come into it and people start using it and grandstanding and all of that. They can't even say, and that's just a huge frustration.
Yeah, and like you said, I mean, we don't necessarily hear about the victories. I mean, we hear about some of the victories, and I think that here at TYT, we try to spotlight when they have successfully shut down these cells, and that's not just in the UK, that happens in the US. I mean, we had that big like 9-state network of white supremacists who wanted to start a race war by burning down a bunch of churches. I mean, that was shut down, it didn't happen. But then there's the other layer of victories, as you're saying, that we will of course never hear about because it's incredibly sensitive. They need to maintain blah, blah sources, all that.
The sources, the people that are providing this.
Exactly.
And the gathering of those sources is so dangerous too. So.
Yes, and we need to maintain the security and privacy of those until Trump tweets about it or whispers it to a diplomat. And in terms of like, if they're collecting nuclear material to make a dirty bomb, you really hope that intelligence, I mean, it seems like that's something that you should be able to stop. But if somebody wants to get in their car and run off the road into a crowd of people in a city of millions upon millions of people, you can have the most effective crime fighting organization in the world. And I don't think you will ever be able to stop all of those. And that's a tragedy, and you're not supposed to say that. You're supposed to say, we're gonna keep everyone safe in all cases. But I don't think that that's actually true. I don't think that that's actually achievable. And that's not to say anything about particular cases.
Counterterrorism, in my opinion, has to do with so many different factors. It's not just surveillance. It's not just, you know, intelligence gathering. It's also, you know, foreign policy decisions that are being made.
I agree.
Type of rhetoric that's being used by government officials. Now, understand, when I say rhetoric, I'm not saying, you know, every politician should go out there in public and talk about how amazing, you know, this group of people are. Of course, I'm not saying that. However, I think it's important to make sure that you make it extremely difficult for a terrorist organization like ISIS to recruit people, right? Mm-hmm. And so it's very easy to recruit people when, you know, Western governments are killing innocent civilians in Middle Eastern countries, yeah. right? And just think about it in your context, right? And for one second, even if you're like the most extreme when it comes to this issue, put yourself in anyone's position, put yourself in these people's positions where you're living in a Middle Eastern country and a drone strike wipes out your entire family. Mm-hmm. How incredibly easy would it be for you to want vengeance and for you to join a terrorist organization that also wants vengeance yeah. against Western countries? I'm just saying that as part of, you know, a comprehensive counterterrorism strategy that I think needs to be implemented. And unfortunately, we're missing the mark because we're allowing our emotions to get in the way.
Well, and that's what I'm saying. I'm saying if you are going to be doing all that stuff, running around the world and stoking the flames of extremism, then you can't expect that regardless of how much information you give, how many cops are on the streets, you will not be able to stop all the attacks.
You're not gonna, right. But if you stopped doing that entirely, which is not gonna happen, I think that this is a generational thing too. I think these are mm-hmm. young men who came of age at a time where countries were being wiped out by war. And
that's all they've ever known.
And there's this sort of, and there's not a tremendous amount of education. Where there is education, it's education in many ways coming from people who are preaching exactly what they want to yes. hear. So it's, and so I think it's a generational thing. I think it was just like with the Irish Republican Army. I think it is just like it was in South America for some, with and Italy even. I mean, there are generations where this happens and people come up, and Israel and Palestine are similar. So I don't know that anything, I mean, that sounds terrible, but I don't know that anything's effective. I don't think yeah. rhetoric, I don't think changing practices, I really don't think
what does effective mean? I mean, cutting down some percentage
well, certainly,
if it stops.
Yeah, but I don't think rhetoric is going to change any minds.
You know what's not going to change anything? The shit that we've been doing so far, that's not going to change anything.
Right, but it's not going to change the desire. What I'm saying is, I don't know that we're doing a terrible job, and it sounds horrible because this keeps happening. I don't know that the people that are fighting this are doing a terrible job, because that it doesn't happen every day in a weird way.
There you're talking about like investigators, police, FBI, those sorts of things.
Right, and the policies that support them as well, and intelligence sharing among nations. And
you're not talking about militaries abroad and that
no,
sort of thing.
No, yes. Of course
okay,
not.
Just to be clear.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you for clarifying. And not at all. And militaries abroad, I mean, listen, we've gotten used to being a nation that has military abroad everywhere. And that was a post-war thing, and it's probably time to revisit that. But that's not even so easily done because a lot of the countries want us, and it employs a lot of people and a lot of.
It employs a lot of people. That's
definitely
the case.
Yeah, we saw that in the recent trip to Saudi Arabia.
But a lot of countries want it too, though. I mean, a lot of these countries want that as well. So it becomes a difficult. But employing a lot of people is important too. I mean, I don't think that's a. I'm not talking about employing the infrastructure of the people that make weapons great. I'm talking about the military as the Department of Defense is a huge employer in our country for better or worse.
I think that that's actually incredibly problematic. I think that's the main reason why we keep, you know, pushing for foreign policy that fails time and time again. When I say fails time and time again, I'm saying, you know, amplifying wars in countries that lead to more hostility toward the United States, lead to more hostility toward the Western world. Mm-hmm. And by the way, I know that there are people who disagree deeply on this issue, right? But if I'm wrong, please give me a solution. Please provide a solution other than what we've been doing so far.
Clay Higgins has a solution later on the show, don't worry.
Right, we'll get to that later.
Well, anyway. It's a defense department, not an offense department. So if people think of it that way, that would be better.
Yeah. Okay, let's turn to a slightly different angle on this. Immediately following the attack in London, Donald Trump launched his own attack on London, specifically the mayor, Sadiq Khan, who he does not appear to be a big fan of. So at the same time that many Americans are extending their sympathies to those affected by the attack, he starts sending a stream of course, tweets. Starting with this, and it sounds pretty good, whatever the United States can do to help out in London around the UK and the UK, we will be there. We are with you, God bless. And then 60 seconds of serenity later, he then decided to take a slightly different tack. And he said, we must stop being politically correct and get down to the business of security for our people. If we don't get smart, it will only get worse. because you can just say that political correctness is what is allowing these attacks to happen without providing any evidence whatsoever, and you can be president with that, or you can have a show on the internet with that. People are using that for both ends these days. And then he goes on to say, at least 7 dead and 48 wounded in terror attack, and mayor of London says there is, quote, no reason to be alarmed. Oh my God. The mayor would say something as tone deaf as that after 7 are dead? No, of course he wouldn't. It's a complete purposeful misrepresentation of what Sadiq Khan was saying, which is this: Londoners will see an increased police presence today, and over the course of the next few days, there's no reason to be alarmed.
Yeah, and by the way,
no one doesn't understand what that means when they read that.
That was a perfectly fine tweet, right? I'm talking about Sadiq Khan's tweet. And even so, there were people who read it in context. They're like, it's still outrageous because he said no reason to be alarmed.
Yeah.
Okay, so what's your solution? To be alarmed? To cause panic? For everyone to like lose it and
yeah, including,
you know,
the president,
throw feces at one another? I don't understand. How is that a good solution or a good reaction to a tragedy that just occurred?
Yeah.
That will only make matters worse,
yeah,
right?
Throwing feces is not a good solution.
Not a good solution, right?
I agree. And so the people you're describing that freaked out, one of them was, of course, the president. Because despite the fact that that statement we read you from Sadiq Khan is incredibly clear that he's reassuring people that simply because they've deployed more police to the streets does not mean that they believe that there are further attacks coming, so don't worry, into, don't worry about terrorism when the president reads it. So the president gets attacked for what he said and then doubles down, saying, pathetic excuse by London Mayor Sadiq Khan, who had to think fast on his, quote, no reason to be alarmed statement. MSM is working hard to sell it. No, the MSM is not working hard to sell it. The English language is working easily to sell it because words have meanings, especially when you put them in a particular order. And everybody who has a first or second degree reading comprehension level understands what Sadiq Khan meant there. Sadiq Khan was being responsible in the face of a population that had reason to be afraid, and so he was reassuring them. You are scoring cheap, stupid political points off of it by trying to attack the mayor of a town who had just been attacked. As if somebody had decided in the hours after 9/11 to go on a tear against Rudy Giuliani and attacking him as pathetic in the wake of it. How crazy would that have been? Well, now, maybe not crazy coming from him, because this is the guy, after all, who in the hours after 9/11 said that we now have the biggest building in New York. So maybe he thinks everyone is as crazy as he is, but nobody was responding that way to Sadiq Khan other than Trump.
Rudy Giuliani was saying, go about your business, be New Yorkers. That's what New Yorkers do. They go about their business.
Very similar to what Sadiq Khan was saying.
Similar to what Sadiq Khan was saying.
Yes.
Yeah.
Back when Rudy Giuliani wasn't crazy.
Also, let's not forget the fact that the mayor of London is a Muslim mayor,
yes,
right? And so when you talk about Trump trying to earn some political points with his base, that's exactly what you're referring to, right? The fact that he is attacking a Muslim mayor. Now, would he have a similar response if it were any other mayor with any other background? I don't know, probably not. But I think the fact that it is a Muslim mayor is exactly what motivated Trump to attack him as he's in the middle of dealing with a tragedy in his own, you know, in the town that he represents. Like, yeah, it's just so disgusting.
He's
all
had
of
a
it
bad week with mayors too, because the mayor of Pittsburgh's been all over
That's
him
true.
For Paris and Pittsburgh. All these other mayors getting together to
161 mayors standing against him. Yeah, there's also some chance that he thinks Sadiq Khan is the father, is Kaiser Khan actually, Gold Star father. No, that's not actually the case. And he's already done so much to alienate our closest allies over the course of the past 100 years. I mean, unnecessarily antagonizing Germany, weirdly leaking information in the wake of the Manchester terror attack. And so there's already reasons to be worried about our future relationships with France and Germany and the UK. And this is just throwing fuel in the fire for no purpose. And I know that his supporters hate every other country around the world and want it to be not America first, but America only. But this has consequences in terms of us receiving perhaps intelligence from them, fighting against threats to ourselves. It's so stupid, so short-sighted, and so obvious that we would have these sorts of problems if we allowed Donald Trump to become president. But there's one other element to this. In addition to attacking Sadiq Khan after the London terror attack, Donald Trump also made a point that made a point, but not the point he was trying to make. He tweeted this: do you notice we are not having a gun debate right now? That's because they used knives and a truck. So he tweeted that. because of course they had used both a truck and I believe it was a van and knives to kill 7 people. He doesn't seem overly concerned about the victims there. He seems concerned about a political point, but fine, we'll run with it. So he's true, we're not having a gun debate at that time because they used a van and knives. And I noticed, in the same way that every other person on the face of the earth noticed, that if they had used guns, it would have been worse. And I don't think when they were planning the attack, they looked at a table that had knives on it and guns, AK-47s and a knife, and said, let's mix it up this time, let's go with the knives.
Exactly. Yeah.
Obviously, if they had been able to use guns, they would have used guns, and more than likely, far more people would have died. But the UK is a country that actually takes guns seriously and has limited them, and that's why they didn't have access to guns. It's such a stupid, obvious
and
point.
And Al-Qaeda, according to reports, is telling people here, trainees here in this country, to use the gun show loophole to buy and accumulate AK-47s and other weaponry. So there goes that argument.
It's a great point. It's falling on deaf ears. Yeah. No one cares. Yeah. No one cares at all, including members of our own audience. Guns will always be widely available in the United States. It's not even worth having a debate about guns anymore.
Right.
Let's just move on.
That's
so.
Right. Can I 5 seconds before I move on? Because I say this over and over, and I know that there are people who hate watches.
You're gonna say a good guy with a van could have stopped a bad guy?
No, I'm not gonna say anything approaching that. But I know that we have some people who hate watch this, and so I will try to appeal to you. You hear that people here, mass shooters, go to places where there are no guns because they know they can get away with it. And somebody tweeted out, I think it was a politician, said, there's never been a terror attack at a NASCAR event because everyone at NASCAR is armed, which is silly, especially because you're not allowed to bring guns in a NASCAR event, so it's wrong. And secondly, the idea that these people who do these attacks wouldn't go to a place where they knew there were guns and they might be shot. I don't think these people making this criticism understand what the point of a suicide mission is. They know they're dying at the end of it. Guns aren't dissuading them from doing that.
Right.
But if you actually believe that point, that taking away citizens' guns means that the criminals will still be able to get it and they'll terrorize people, why is it that in the UK, in London specifically, where it's very hard to get a gun, why aren't the criminals all arming up with the guns that you say they'll still be able to get and then running amok throughout London? It's not actually happening because it's a stupid point. And you taking this long to realize that is causing people's lives to be lost.
Right.
Here in the
US. I don't even know if we're going to get to it today, but there was another shooting in Orlando today, right?
Yes.
Where an angry ex-employee of a company decided to go in and open fire against his former colleagues and employers.
Yeah.
So, I mean, these stories have become so commonplace, they don't even make it to the top of the rundown anymore.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah.
We shouldn't let that American into our country.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. And that's the true point. Like if we were to cover all of the mass shootings here on TYT, that is all that we would cover.
You could have a network that's the state of our just country. Devoted to that.
Yeah. Okay. We are going to take our first break. When we come back, though, we've got the story, the documents leaked by the NSA to The Intercept, revealing Russian intelligence campaign to hack into U.S. voting software corporations. We'll have all the details when we come back from this break. Welcome back to the first hour of The Young Turks with John and Michael and Anna. Before we get back to the stories, and we've got a lot of big ones, I do want to read some of your tweets. First, Cold Hands noticed the pin saying, loving the TYT pin, John. So I like wearing pins. I have a couple that I wear from time to time. But we do have, I don't know if you can show, it's probably a little bit bent.
Can you guys believe he's not wearing an American flag on his lapel?
It's insulting,
how
really.
How dare you?
Anyway,
well,
this is, I don't know if it's already available. Yeah, you'd think.
Yeah.
Fox was attacking Wonder Woman, saying she wasn't sufficiently patriotic.
I can't.
She fought
the
Germans in World War
I. I just want to fall asleep and not wake up until this madness
anyway,
is over.
Anyway, okay, so the reason I'm wearing this today, though, is if they're not already available on the website, which they might be, clearly I did research, they will be soon. We have a number of different pins for particular shows, for Wolfpack, different logos of TYT. Some of them, by the way, could very well be limited editions, so maybe look into it before they're gone. Anyway, other tweets, let's see. Becky Armstrong said, lone wolf attacks are nearly completely unpredictable, which
Becky's,
is true.
Becky's right, some, I mean, that's the thing. Like, this is, like that's Anna what said. Makes this so unfightable,
yeah.
Really.
But didn't ISIS put out a directive to all of their whatever terrorists throughout the world to use knives and attack people, especially during Ramadan?
Yeah.
Right? So, I mean, I guess
still potentially millions of people who could carry that out.
But either way, listen, I think it takes, why are people, especially young men living in free societies, why are they easily convinced to join a terrorist organization and essentially get themselves killed while they carry out a terrorist attack? Like, you gotta ask that question. These are young guys, they're in their 20s, right? Why are they doing it? I mean, I think that's part of the question. I think that's part of the solution.
I agree.
But unfortunately, we're not focusing on that because everything's politicized and everything is really done for profit as opposed to coming up with solutions that puts an end to this.
Yeah. El Duende Chingon says, when I tweet something stupid, I only embarrass myself. When a president does it, it embarrasses an entire nation. Mm-hmm. And that's true. I feel like a lot of travel internationally these days is going to be apologizing for the things that America's done. Well, he has forced apology tours on us.
Yeah, and none of them are coming here. Travel to the United States is way down, which I guess you guys have covered, or maybe you have.
So, yeah, there's also,
it's a bad deal.
There's also a lot of news of Americans who are too afraid to travel out of the country, US citizens who are afraid to travel out of the country because they look Muslim and they think that they might have a hard time getting back in. One person was quoted as saying in this article that I was reading earlier today, I just don't know, like Trump is so unpredictable. He could sign an executive order tomorrow just banning me from going back to my own country, even though I was born in the United States. So people are afraid.
We're gonna be talking about that topic a little bit later on the hour.
It's a reasonable fear. If Cenk can't get back in, it's the three of us for a while, I guess, right?
Hope you're ready for that.
Gotta leave early on Friday, but it's
Okay. Unacceptable. You're staying. Okay, second hour for you. Okay, let's jump back into the news. The Intercept has released documents that were given to them by the NSA that they then independently verified that describes a campaign investigated by the NSA by Russian intelligence to hack into US voting software corporations. They're named but not in the document. There's some contextual information that leads them to believe it might be one particular voting software corporation called VR, but we don't know that that's true at this point. And then furthermore, after hacking into that corporation, using the information revealed by that campaign to then hack into over 100 other local government offices and officials' offices as well. Now, this information was released right before we went live, so some of the details will be a little bit sketchy, but we do want to give you the broad strokes. They described, this is the NSA, Russian General Staff Main Intelligence Directorate actors executed cyber espionage operations against a named US company in August of 2016, evidently to obtain information on elections related software and hardware solutions. The actors likely used data obtained from that operation to launch a voter registration themed spear phishing campaign targeting US local government organizations. Now, overall, it's important to note what we know from this and what we don't know from this, what it says and what it doesn't say, because the headline can be interpreted in a lot of different ways. The NSA analysis does not draw conclusions about whether the interference had any effect on the election's outcome and concedes that much remains unknown about the extent of the hacker's accomplishments. However, the report raises the possibility that Russian hacking may have breached at least some elements of the voting system. Now, importantly, as we described both before and after the election, stealing an election in America is incredibly complicated because our election system is incredibly decentralized. It is not a system, it is hundreds or thousands of systems.
Wasn't impossible in 2000. They made that pretty easy.
Yeah, that's true. that's perhaps an exception there.
Yeah.
But to simply come in as an outsider and digitally affect it is incredibly complicated. Now, if you had perfect information about the particular counties that will matter most, that certainly simplifies the process, but from election to election, that changes. And the places that you would need to target are different from election to election.
Can we hold? Go ahead.
So the only other thing I will say right now is while the raw intelligence that the NSA based this analysis on is not a part of what was leaked to The Intercept, we do know that they're apparently in the federal government taking this very seriously, because you described that an arrest was made just a couple of days ago, believed to be in relation to this.
And that information was released today. A federal government contractor in Georgia is charged with removing and mailing classified materials to a news outlet. Lee Winner, 25 years old, a federal contractor from Augusta, Georgia, was arrested for removing classified material from a government facility mailing it to a news outlet. And the report in question, that classified report was from May 5th, which is exactly when the one in The Intercept was cited. So they haven't linked her directly to this, but they've made an arrest. And you know, she appeared in federal court after her arrest this past Saturday on the 3rd of June. So this is the beginning of the postscript to this story, but only the beginning of that.
So we don't know whether or not this had any impact on the outcome of the election, right? And of course, everyone wants to be hypersensitive and hyper-focused on that issue. But I think the real issue here is not the outcome of the election, but what we know has happened based on intelligence gathering, based on this report that was leaked to The Intercept and that originated from the NSA. For those who continuously deny that Russia has anything to do with anything, they never tried to hack into our elections, they didn't try to push out the fake news to try to sway voters, they had nothing to do with anything, it's all a nonsense story drummed up by the DNC to make up or make excuses for their loss, you're ridiculous. Yeah. I mean, how much more? I don't know how much more. I know it's a slow, annoying, steady drip of information, and believe me, no one's more frustrated by this story than I am.
So was Watergate. Right? Watergate was slow for months.
It's not. Look, this isn't freaking crime scene investigation.
No.
Right? This is not a television show. This is not a movie. This is real life.
Yeah.
And information gathering, intelligence gathering, is a slow and steady process. And so, if you have evidence clearing Russia of any wrongdoing, then let's have a conversation. If you don't, and you want to go around making a name for yourself saying nonsense, then I have no interest in you, right?
Yeah, some people seem to believe that like there will be one piece of evidence, it will glow with the light of truth, and you shall hold it up to the viewership, and and you're not gonna have a tape of Vladimir Putin saying, I will steal the US election.
Right.
It's not gonna be that specific. This is evidence.
If only we can get a US media person to interview Vladimir Putin so we can get down to the truth and figure out what's really going on.
Well, and I'm glad that you mentioned that, because of course in that interview, which I believe is tonight between Megyn Kelly and Vladimir Putin, I love that Megyn Kelly can just erase her history and all the things that she's done. But anyway, so he specifically denies
it's a pretty good get, though. I mean, in the whole scheme of it's a good get.
But in that interview, Vladimir Putin denies any involvement. But also in the past day or two, he had said that maybe a Russian, a patriotic-minded Russian, could take it upon themselves.
That's right.
To go and do some hacking.
Right.
So I guess that's
not me.
Not me. And look, so again, this is not like we don't have all of the intelligence here, but. I just want to, I apologize, I don't have all the names. Ryan Grimm, contributor to TYT, was one of the four Intercept writers who put together this report. Hopefully more information will be forthcoming. And it's interesting that, of course, this comes out just 3 days, I believe, before James Comey is expected to testify. So this appears it will be a very illuminating week for this general topic. Welcome back to the first hour of the Young Turks. John Arulla, Anna Kasparian, and Michael Shore. Just a short little break there for some technical issues, but we are back and we have a lot more to get to, including tweets from you guys. Carl J. Peterson says, it can't be impossible to change the results of an election by fraud. I've seen Scandal. I haven't seen Scandal, but I'm not sure how much you should trust it. Let's see. Celeste Holmes says, yes, Watergate was a drip, 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 but we also had a functioning press owned by over 60 entities at the time of Watergate.
That's true, but also there were both houses of the Congress held by the opposition party.
Yes, that definitely changes things.
And even with that, it took a long time.
That's
true. Celeste's not wrong, but I mean, even that against them made it, that. They had that and it was still difficult.
That's true. And Joseph S. finally says, I'm okay with Russia investigation. I do have a problem when Dems use the Russia investigation to avoid talking about single payer, which is true in some cases. But I think in this case, The Intercept is probably not doing that, so you don't have to
worry. Right. In fact, I mean, just to be clear, Glenn Greenwald has been, very skeptical of all the Russia stuff. And the fact that that appeared on The Intercept, I think, says something. By the way, one quick thing that I wanted to bring up. Just in response to the criticism toward Democrats, look, I definitely agree that there should be more focus on policy in addition to the Russia investigations. There's no question about that. And so for people who are frustrated that they aren't focusing on policy, I'm right there with you.
Well, but it involves policy. Well, you're talking about other policies.
I'm talking about other policy, right?
Certainly our sanctions and stuff like that, those are very important, gigantic policies.
Yes, they are. Yeah. But they have, look, they want to impeach Trump. And so they've latched on to the Russia issue. And for the most part, kind of neglected other things that Americans really do care about. So I understand that criticism, I'm right there with you. But for those who are like, don't talk about Russia at all, there's nothing there, I think you're ridiculous.
Yeah, that is ridiculous. I also just want to, in 6 seconds, address what you said. It's going to be like 14. But we'll see. You know, it's not just about impeaching Trump. Mm-hmm. They've done a masterful job in the political sense, forgetting what you think of the people involved. Nancy Pelosi, for example, I think this is the best that she's ever been since she's been in Congress in the leadership, holding together her coalition of Democrats, almost leak-proof, I mean, not leak in the way we talk about them, but just airtight, in opposition to what the other side is doing here, keeping them together. If it came to policy discussions, both houses in the minority, very, very difficult to do. And then they would break up that coalition against the president. Yeah. There is some strategy here which has to be appreciated, even if you don't like the players, even if you don't like the party, and even if you wish they would talk about policy more. That's all.
Okay. 40 seconds.
And then one final thing, I'm sorry, I have to respond to one tweet. I'm sorry. Diva Athan says, as much as I love Anna, I think she's wrong. We need to keep working for wiser gun laws and talking about the gun debate. Look, I agree with you. I'm just
insane. When
did
you say otherwise?
Yeah. No, because I was partly being hyperbolic when we were talking about the gun issue, and I was like, it's falling on deaf ears, let's not even talk about it, it's worthless. And then
I thought you were serious. I'm not serious.
Right. I'm frustrated, and so I just want to clear that up with you.
Yeah, guys. And I feel much the same way. Like 90% of the country wants more extreme background checks. No. Right. That is very frustrating.
Yeah. You didn't apologize for talking like we did.
Shut up. Okay, I'm gonna get back to the news, okay? Because that's what I'm here for. Anyway. Republican Congressman from Louisiana, Clay Higgins, has effectively called for a holy war between Christianity and Islam, and also for the execution of anyone who's suspected of being a radical Muslim. Here's a picture of Clay Higgins, in case you were questioning the way I described what he was calling for. Seems a little bit more reasonable now. But here's what he posted on Facebook. The free world, all of Christendom, is at war with Islamic horror. Not one penny of American treasure should be granted to any nation who harbors these heathen animals. Not a single radicalized Islamic suspect should be granted any measure of quarter. Their intended entry to the American homeland should be summarily denied. Every conceivable measure should be engaged to hunt them down. Hunt them, identify them, and kill them. Kill them all. For the sake of all that is good and righteous, kill them all. He did use the word suspect there, though, which I thought was relevant.
And he invoked Christ. He is married for the fourth time, is Clay Higgins. His first wife, his first marriage ended in divorce, citing adultery. He's also been taken to court for child support, which he has, he's been ruled against, and he is a deadbeat dad.
Oh, he's a deadbeat. Where are the fathers?
Exactly.
Right?
And his lawyer said now that he's a congressman, he's too busy to pay.
Right.
So he's been
too busy.
He's too busy to deal with paying. He has not paid any of his back child support.
Yeah. Right.
It has nothing to do with what he just said.
But I think it's relevant.
I think you have to paint a picture of the people saying these things and invoking Christ.
I think it is relevant because obviously he believes in lawlessness. He doesn't believe in following the law. He believes in extrajudicial killings. And by the way, you think it's going to solve problems to just go out and kill people that you suspect of being Muslim extremists? You think that's going to solve problems? He's dangerous. And also, the First Amendment doesn't protect you from certain types of speech. And in that list of things that you're not protected from is inciting violence, right?
Yeah.
He is inciting violence. He is calling on his constituents to go out there and literally murder people that they suspect of being Muslim extremists.
Yeah.
That is incredibly dangerous language. And for all the people who are like, it's free speech, please, for the love of God, read the Constitution to understand what the First Amendment says.
Exactly. Yeah, just to add to his background, he was apparently fired from one of his law enforcement jobs, in part because he was selling merchandise using like the police police department's colors and symbols, even though he'd been given no authorization to do that. Seems like he could have taken some of that money and funneled it into his family, but no, he's out there worrying about the terrorists there. Now, after a lot of criticism, which he received because he's a congressman calling for people suspected of things to be murdered, a spokesperson said Representative Higgins is referring to terrorists. He's advocating for hunting down and killing all of the terrorists. This is an idea all of America and Britain should be united behind.
No, no, no. He
said suspects.
He said suspects. He didn't say convicted terrorists, right? Yeah. He also doesn't believe that we should waste any of our resources on trying these individuals, right? So let's not investigate them. Let's not try them. If you just suspect that they might be Muslim extremists, let's go ahead and murder them. First of all, it's against everything that this country is supposed to
be. And it's why we're where we are right now. To a degree, it's why we are where we are. Because of Guantanamo, because of rounding people up and talking about people
in that way. Yeah.
And drone strikes, but mostly because of George W. Bush's war in Iraq. But that's not what he's talking about. But he's talking about suspected.
And that's the same
thing.
And
also,
by the way, where's all the outrage by the right in regard to what he just said, right? The fact that he is clearly inciting violence, clearly calling for extrajudicial killings, clearly calling for vigilantism. You know, it's funny because people on the left are ready to apologize willy-nilly for every little thing. Dino Badalla apologizing for calling Donald Trump a piece of shit on Twitter. Dean, what are you doing? He is a piece of shit. Why would you apologize for that?
Reza Aslan, I think.
Oh, it was Reza Aslan. Yeah. My bad.
Dean might have also called him a piece of shit. I'm not sure.
Right. Well, hopefully he didn't apologize for it. But Reza, what are you doing? And also, it's just incredible because Democrats will cave immediately. Republicans double down, and that's exactly what Higgins did.
Yeah, exactly.
In his statement.
Yeah, and in a larger sense also, I mean, he's trying to change the meaning of what he said, but he also basically said we need to be at war with Islam, all of it. And also, so people obviously rightfully don't like the idea of a caliphate. And Christianity doesn't have an exact sort of equivalent of a caliphate. But when you take Christianity and you refer to it as Christendom instead, you go a step closer to that. Yeah. It sounds a little bit more like that, so I would not go in that direction. Anyway, lots more to get to. Right now, the Justice Department is working to convince the Supreme Court to uphold Donald Trump's second version of his Muslim travel ban. At the same time that they're out doing that extremely hard job, Trump is going on Twitter to attack his own lawyers and his own travel ban, and to effectively directly undercut every element of their legal argument. So here are some of the tweets in which he attacked his team. People, the lawyers, and the courts can call it whatever they want, but I am calling it what we need and what it is, a travel ban. After his first travel ban was taken out by a federal court, in part because it was referred to as a Muslim ban. And so since then, his lawyers have been trying to not use the ban terminology and talk about sort of temporary extra vetting and stuff like that. So he's attacking them as they're doing that. He went on to say the Justice Department should have stayed with the original travel ban, not the watered down, politically correct version they submitted to SC. And what's interesting about that is that he's saying the Justice Department did this watered down version, but they didn't. You did when you signed it, you fool. That's your second travel ban, your watered down travel ban. Does he not know what he's signing when he's signing it?
Probably
he probably doesn't.
But he goes on to say the Justice Department should ask for an expedited hearing of the watered down travel ban in capital letters before the Supreme Court and seek much tougher version. And that's where he really closes the loop, because his first ban was shot down because it was seen as a Muslim ban, so it had a religious component, and that it was too harsh. And so his lawyers came up with this second version, and they're saying it's not as bad as that. And so when you go out and say it's still a travel ban and this is just the first step towards having a much harsher one, you now have no case anymore.
Yeah.
Imagine being this guy's lawyer.
So this is one of the reasons why I'm torn on his Twitter usage, because on one hand, he'll attack the mayor of London and embarrass every single American. But on the other hand, he will tweet things that will essentially be used as evidence by these federal judges to block some of his executive actions.
Yeah.
And so if you want to be an idiot and you want to be transparent about how stupid you are, then by all means, please do that. If it means that these federal judges can come in, use this as evidence and block you from going through with your crazy ideas. But again, he's not a leader. He doesn't think about his actions before he takes them. He just does things all chaotically without putting much thought behind it. And it is dangerous in some instances, but in this instance, at least it works in our favor.
Well, and it's bizarre also that you have two things working at the same time. You have a guy who is hyper focused on loyalty, that everyone under him has to be focused on him, and a president who at the same time attacks his own side more than anyone I've ever seen in my life.
The Justice Department, so intelligence communities.
Why would you be loyal to this guy?
It's prevented him, even with the House and the Senate, from getting anything accomplished. I mean, when you think about
except for all the executive orders.
Because that's perfectly who he is, executive orders. But when it comes to actually doing something, like Anna was just saying, totally incompetent on that.
Yeah, exactly.
Thankfully, you know?
Yeah, now there is one other thing we want to talk about in what remains of the first hour, an unfortunate development in a special election. Democrat Kim Weaver was running against Republican incumbent Steve King for his congressional seat, but announced yesterday that she would be stepping down from that race due to multiple reasons. But one of them was rampant death threats that she's been receiving for apparently many months. So we're gonna read a section from her announcement, which was posted on her Facebook, which says, "Beginning during my 2016 campaign, I've received very alarming acts of intimidation, including death threats. While some may say enduring threats are just a part of running for office, my personal safety has increasingly become a concern." She goes on to say, "Above this, my personal health is an issue. In order to sufficiently devote myself to the campaign, I would have to quit my job and shift to campaigning full time. With recent legislation on health insurance, I must admit that the possibility of seeking a new job after the election exposes too much of a risk for me in not being able to secure health insurance." So in that second part, she's experiencing something that many Americans are going to experience, a restriction on their ability to pursue their life thanks to Republican legislation. But there, she's saying that both during the special election and in the previous election where she ran against Steve King, receiving these death threats, and almost certainly we know how this game goes, rape threats as well, I'm sure. And so she felt that to protect her life, she needed to drop out. So Steve King now apparently will sail to an easy victory, and so he will accept that victory with the grace and poise that we expect from a man who has talked about subcultures and lesser humans. He says, "I wanted Kim Weaver in the race, not out. Democrats drove her out of the race, not ours. Death threats likely didn't happen, but a fabrication."
Death threats likely didn't happen? I'm sure he gets death threats on a regular basis. Yeah. Death threats are part of the internet. Look, I don't want to minimize some of the trauma that people experience as a result of these threats. Sometimes they're extremely specific, sometimes they include personal information, including your address. And it's a scary situation if you haven't been, you know, experienced with it previously. So if it's something that has convinced her, hey, you know what, the costs outweigh the benefits of running, I don't want to be too harsh on her. I don't know everything about her personal life. She could have these serious health issues. And again, if the costs outweigh the benefits, then it's up to her to make that decision, even though I do wish she fought, right? Yeah. Because we need someone who's going to fight against, you know, these members of Congress who are incredibly dangerous. But yeah, like it's to say that these death threats are a fabrication is ridiculous, especially when you know death threats happen on, like someone's threatening my life right now as I'm talking, right? Yeah, it's just an all day, everyday thing that happens on the internet. So no, they're not fabricated, they do happen.
He's just a terrible person.
He's a really bad guy.
He represents the worst elements of America.
He's a racist. I mean, that's what he is.
He's just an out and out racist.
Yeah. So, and he support. You know, he supported when Geert Wilders, the nationalist candidate from
the Netherlands,
came over to the United States. He came over as a guest of Steve King and Louis Gohmert as well. He got a tour of the House. He got a tour of the Senate and the galleries and everything. And they were there because of Steve King. He embraces this at every turn. He's a bad guy.
Yeah. I mean, that response was. Like whether you believe that she's right to drop out because she's concerned that she'll be killed or not, maybe just keep it to yourself. Like you got what you wanted, you're gonna be a congressman again, you're gonna have a platform
but
to
espouse.
But he may
not, I mean they're gonna find another candidate and this race got more attention because of this. I mean that's not the attention you want.
It's possible.
They'll get another candidate, someone will vote, run against Steve King, hopefully somebody who's super progressive. And in that state where there's appeal to super progressives, And they'll lose. But it's still be great.
Yeah, I hate the myth that we're forced to, it's the weird neutrality that we have to have where we have to pretend that in the American context, political violence happens. And hey, sometimes it targets Democrats and sometimes it targets Republicans. It's not true. It's not saying that it's always in one direction, but we know in America, generally, it's Democratic and left-wing politicians that are targeted through acts of political violence, even recently in America. And so, like, I would hope that she would continue, but I understand why she cannot. Because the threat is real, and Democratic congressmen and politicians, governors, senators have been shot not too long ago. And so I understand why she'd be afraid. Unfortunately, that is the end of the first hour. Thank you both to Michael and to Anna for joining me in the first hour. We're going to take a short break, but when we come back, Brett Ehrlich and Hassan are going to be joining Anna. And you're going to have an awesome second hour. What story are you most looking forward to? Putting you on the spot.
Yeah, I don't know. There's a lot of stuff that you guys don't want to miss, so just come back.
Okay, there's a Kickstarter that's attempting to rejuvenate the rich elderly, and you might be able to cash in on this.
Right, right.
Yeah,
that's a good story.
I might be because I'm elderly.
There you go. You'll find out how after this break.